You're listening to Games of Future Past on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Games of Future Past.
Hello.
I am Tim Eggers. That is Dave Ottavino.
I'm me.
Yeah, we are here today.
At the behest.
Yeah, to talk about a little NES game called Vice Project Doom.
What is this game, you say?
It's Vice Project Doom. This was suggested to me by Robert V. Aldrich at MAGFest this past year when I was telling him kind of what we were doing here at Fat Gatsby and getting him caught up on the creative side of my life. And I was like, oh, yeah, if you got any idea for games you'd want us to talk about, old games or whatever, just let me know. And he was like, right off the top of his head, Vice Project Doom. And I should have followed up with him just to ask what his history with the game was. But it was probably, I just assume this was one of those games that he had for his NES, the way that back in our day, if you grew up in the NES era,
you played what you were.
You played whatever the hell showed up at your house.
Yeah.
Whatever you found, whatever people got for you. Information was so scarce about things. There was obvious things that you knew were good and to look out for, but in between there, it was like you'd look at the box art, like you're at the store, and your mom says you can get one of the $20 games, which, you know, most games were $50. So, like, yeah, you can get one of these games that's 20 or 15 bucks or whatever. Which one's it going to be? Like, okay, shit, I'll get this one because I remember seeing it in Nintendo Power, so it must be decent, right?
Exactly, and that's the Vice Project Doom was a cover story for Nintendo Power.
And goddamn it, I could not find that issue.
Ah, it's too bad.
I was like, I got all my Nintendo Powers and old EGMs in my basement because I don't get rid of anything. And I haven't quite sorted them yet, but I was going insane digging through these, you know, the box and a half of Nintendo Powers that I have. I have like every fucking issue from that era except this one. Like, it's issue 24. I can tell you because I have 23, and that says in the back of it, next month, Vice Project Doom. And then I have the issue after that, which is Battletoads. But I don't have the Vice Project Doom issue.
I should have looked it up on Retro Mags.
Whatever.
what issue did you say it was? 27? Oh, there
24.
It is.
24.
24?
I believe.
Okay.
Yeah,
no, it's here. I could download it right now.
All right. Great story.
If I can. In comic book format. I don't know if I could open it. Oh, well.
So anyway, this was nice because this was a game that is actually, you know, as we talked about when we were talking about my collection a few episodes back, this is one of those games that I've had forever and had never actually played. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well,
so
great.
Not only did I play it, I fucking finished it.
You did? Really?
Yeah. I beat Vice Project Doom the third time I sat down with it. And in fairness, the second time I sat down with it was just killing 20 minutes before one of our triple radio recordings recently.
Okay. All right. Well, then you certainly have more experience with it than I do because I could not. It is technically the third boss in the game, but it is the second side-scrolling level. It's the guy with the staff that shoots the fireballs.
Oh, my God. You just crouch right next to him. His fire doesn't hit you.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I knew it was something simple like that. And
yeah.
I was like, because I really like this game. I was going to go online and like look at a YouTube video to see if I could find a playthrough and like, how do I get past this guy? Because this is a very good game.
It's a pretty good game. This is mostly a side scrolling game.
Yeah.
The game opens with you, the opening action stage, I guess I should say, is a kind of overhead car action shooter level, sort
spy hunter-ish.
Like spy hunter-ish, except it's like 2 minutes long and you're just shooting things.
Yeah.
So it's really more like a scrolling shooter.
And then it
pops you into the side scrolling levels, and there is there's like a first person shooting gallery.
Yeah.
Also, did you get to that?
No.
Oh,
no,
man. It's not that far after. Yeah.
Okay, I've seen some pics of it.
Well, so the game opens with this car level, and then a few levels in, like a little ways past where you got stuck, there is a first-person shooting gallery sort of deal where, you're shooting ninjas or whipping grenades at them.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's none of those for most of the middle of the game, and then there's two right at the end. There's another shooting gallery and another car chase, like right back to back towards the end of the game.
Yeah, it's weird. It's
really funny.
That's where they chose to. Yeah, it's definitely odd that they didn't stagger those varied gameplay sequences a little bit more. But
well, you know, they had to throw them in where they fit into the story.
Well, yeah, that's true. And what a story. Well, Kurt Culotta has a great write-up of it at Hardcore Gaming 101. Kurt Culotta is Jeremy Parrish's buddy, who Jeremy stole everything he knows from, apparently. And he points that out, that though the spacing of these alternate levels is really uneven, at the very least, they don't outstay their welcome as they do in a game like Bayou Billy.
Oh, yeah. Like, we should do a Bayou Billy episode at some point. And that game does have a lot of variety to it. But these levels, they're so easy to just through. Like, it's like, whatever. They're fun.
they exist to serve the developers' cinematic aspirations.
Yes. And they have some aspirations.
Oh, boy.
Immediately, I would say out the gate, you know, with its cutscenes between levels, this game kind of reminded me. I was just kind of like, oh, well, they're going for a Ninja Gaiden-ish thing.
That's most people's takeaway.
Perhaps
from this game.
Ninja Gaiden, if you will, as you're following this dude who's like a hitman, secret agent, probably a secret agent.
I think he's a narcotics officer.
Okay. It's tough. Like, the translate. This story is all over the fucking place.
It makes
no sense. It is hysterical, though. Like, in the most atypical NES way, this story is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's like, whatever. You start out like you're just, because you get the call, right? You get the call that there's some like truck, like, going up some freeway, and that sets up the driving level where you go and shoot this guy's truck up and you're like, should have pulled over. Then you go here, and then you get some information for a guy that's like, oh, there's been some weird things going around in this town in South Central America called Ricardo.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, I'm going to South Central America. Then the next level is like, I've kind of surmised that it's on like a ship, maybe.
Okay.
Because it's more of an industrial area than South Central America. Then you get to a South Central America level. But at some point, like, in the back third of the game, like, suddenly you're just, like, fighting fucking aliens and demons and whatnot. Like, out of nowhere.
There is a weird...
Oh, and also, speaking of things that make the game like Ninja Gaiden, there's a level on a train where there's lightning flashes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No, there you go.
Like, what the fuck? And the way you grab onto ladders, even though the ladders look like Mega Man ladders, you hold onto them sideways.
It looks like, fucking weird.
Yeah, it looks... It's great.
The enemy variety... I mean, you know, just in the first two side-scrolling levels that I got to experience, there are ghosts with pumpkin heads that throw scythes at you.
Yep.
There are...
Though they move, they're not just like the pumpkin-headed guys in Ninja Gaiden.
Right,
these guys move up and down. There's hopping Chinese ghosts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. God.
Oh, later on, there's birds.
There's birds.
Okay. Oh yeah, there is birds. They're not as fast, and they don't do as much ridiculous damage as Ninja Gaiden birds. But there's birds.
Well, I'll tell you what. Jeremy Parrish himself wrote about this game in GameSpite Volume 5, the NES issue.
Oh no shit.
And he describes it as a supremely confident game. And I think that's a great way to describe it. Like, it's batshit insane. It is a crazy mishmash of a bunch of stuff. But the presentation of everything about this game, like, this is the game they wanted to make.
Absolutely.
And they did it to perfection. Like, everything about this game is the gameplay is polished. Everything works very well. So the alternate weapons that you have all the time are not necessarily as useful as your main weapon, but they're there and they serve their purpose, and everything about the game is there on purpose, really. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's
So you got a sword that does kind of a hacking overhead slash.
It's got a good arc to it.
Yeah, so you can hit enemies that are directly above you if they're like hopping down on top of you or whatever. Yeah. Then you have a gun, which shoots bullets like 3 feet in front of you.
Yeah.
And then there's grenades, which you can throw most of the way across the screen. They do a few hits of damage.
They can arc downward if you place it really, really well. You can hit something on a platform beneath
you.
Yeah,
those are super useful for hitting like enemies in weird places.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you need the gun just, again, like weird places. Mm-hmm. And they help with some of the bosses. Most of the time, though, you're hacking shit with your sword because it's just fast. It has that nice arc to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Good and reliable.
The game looks very nice. It has a similar aesthetic to Ninja Gaiden, sort of dark, almost dystopian looking levels. Kurt Kulata compares it very favorably to games like Shatterhand, Power mm-hmm. Blade,
yeah.
These very, very high quality B tier NES action games. I can see why if you played this game as a kid, like, really, there's no if this was the game that you played instead of Ninja Gaiden, you'd be like, how come everyone hasn't heard of this game?
Yeah, this game's awesome.
Yeah, it's totally awesome.
Yeah, I think if I had grown up with Vice Project Doom, I would think quite fondly of it.
Yeah, Robert, we can totally appreciate what
I think quite fondly of it right now, in fact.
Yeah.
I beat it yesterday.
I'm going to go back to it. And
I was like, man,
box.
I kind of want to play Vice Project Doom again today.
Yeah.
It only takes about, I think, an hour for me to get through at this point.
Blast so
through it.
Here's the weird, though, most of the historical takeaway from this game is that it's a Ninja Gaiden, is that it is a very good Ninja Gaiden clone.
Which is pretty accurate, I think.
That's while it's not untrue, mm-hmm. it dismisses a lot of the history of the developer.
Okay.
This game did not come out of nowhere. Okay, so this developer, ICOM, AICOM,
published by American Sammy.
Yes. A lot of their work was published by either Sammy or Jellico in the States. Okay. This is one of those developers that if you look back at their output, first of all, it took historians, video game historians, about 9 years ago, there's a thread on a video game industry site that meticulously pieces together the history of this developer because they were largely uncredited. They were a ghost developer for Jellico and for Sammy. So people were like pouring through the credits of a lot of old NES and TurboGrafx action games to determine this company's existence. Like, they're only credited on the title.
So freaking weird.
It's super weird. A lot of history needed to be researched to come up with the developer history of ICOM. Their oldest games include Amagon on the NES.
Oh, hey.
Then there's Astyanax on the NES.
That's a solid game.
That's a solid game, but there's also Legendary Axe on the TurboGrafx-16.
Mm.
Playing these games back to back, they are intensely similar.
Yeah.
They share the same engine.
Totally rad?
And yes, totally
which
rad.
Which is they known as rad. Magic John in Japan. Yes.
Magic John. But they made a series of basketball games for both NES and TurboGrafx, mm-hmm. which all use the same engine. They all use the same, like, really impressive looking cinematic close ups of dunking animation every time.
They did that one Golgo 13 game.
Huh. And here's the thing: they did the second Golgo 13 game on the NES, Golgo 13, The Mafat Conspiracy.
Yeah.
They didn't develop the original game, but they did this one. And going back and playing that game, it is the genesis of Vice Project Doom.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
There are a lot of similarities in terms of the way that the cinematic story happens in Golgo 13, the way that there's melee combat, that you have a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. Vice Project Doom feels like they cut their teeth on Golgo 13 and then wanted to create their own property, using everything that they had learned on that game.
Create their own IP that they could then...
Yes.
make sequels and franchise.
Obviously, that never happened. But that's why Vice Project Doom feels like such a confidently executed game. Because these guys have a long history of, like, graphically impressive, competent platformers, GoGo 13 specifically being a direct precursor to this game, they would go on to sort of specialize in shooters. The game that they're probably most famous for at this point is the Neo Geo shooter Viewpoint, which at the time was a critical darling. You know, Viewpoint was one of those shooters that, like, oh, it was a Neo Geo exclusive, and oh, you got to play this game. It's one of the best shooters of all time. EGM named it, you know, the year it came out, it was the shooter of the year. And then they followed that up on Neo Geo with a game called Polestar, which I think they're probably more famous for in retrospect. If you are a shooter fan, if you're a fan of the history of shooters, you probably know Polestar because it is a shameless clone of R-Type on Neo Geo. It literally rips off R-Type, but it's also a very good game. Like, it's a very good shooter. It totally could have been made by IREM. If IREM had made a shooter for Neo Geo, it would have been this game. It is a loving and well-crafted tribute to R-Type, but it totally rips off R-Type. So that's sort of the legacy that ICOM has left, because those are the games that they're actually credited on in the opening, you know, not the title page of the games. But very people know about their history with platformers on the NES and TurboGrafx, and that Vice Project Doom is very much the culmination of this company's early history. It's a very good game. It is very confidently and competently executed and owes a lot to, you know, they have a history. People look at it and say, oh, you ripped those cinematics straight out of Ninja Gaiden. But ICOM was doing that throughout their basketball games, throughout Astyanax and Legendary Axe, and really with GoGo 13.
Yeah, and this was their swan song on the NES, by the looks of it. It was the last game they put out.
Totally Rad looks like it was developed either concurrently or slightly just before but didn't make it to the States.
Magic John. That's right. Yeah.
Yes, Magic John. Oh, you may know it by the name Magic.
Yeah, I imported the Famicom version, Magic John. That's how I know it.
But really, it's a fascinating game with a fascinating company history.
I love how one of the Japanese words I can recognize immediately is Moero, which means burning. Oh. It's the name of one of the basketball games. Yeah, it's just, well, it's in the name of the second Oenden and Project Justice in Japan. Okay. It's just like I see that where I'm like, oh, burning.
Yeah, their basketball games were, you know,
Amagon is called Totsuen Macho Man.
Yeah, it is. Amagon feels very primitive now. Going back, that game feels like Wonder Boy.
I don't know. I kind of want to do like an ICOM episode and go back and play some more of their games.
I know.
Some interesting stuff here.
They really do. It's crazy.
Vice Project Doom.
Vice Project Doom. Yeah, that's a great game. It definitely deserves to sit amongst and Kurt Culotta points this out, it definitely deserves a place amongst the Shatterhands and Power Blades of the world as like a lost NES gem.
You're a detective. Heart, a member of the Vice Unit who was assigned to investigate the BEDA Corporation. The BEDA Corporation is a company involved in the development of electronic equipment and military weapons, which is actually a front operated by a race of alien beings.
That sell drugs, I think.
Fucking Nintendo games, man.
It's great.
Yeah, it's super fun. The bosses are nice and big and have very...
Yes.
Easily memorable patterns. Mm-hmm. You just have to go in there, die a few times, and then you never get touched by them again.
Yeah, hopefully.
Unless you realize that you you can't. Yeah.
The last time I played it, I made a save state right before, because I'm emulating it on my PSP. I made a save state right before that boss with the intention of just going in over and over again until I beat that boss. Until I figured it out. But now that I know the secret.
Yeah, that's the trick, really. Is I like the concept of a safe spot when fighting bosses in 2D games was very common in that era. Mm-hmm. There's just some place where their, you know, fire or whatever will not hit you. In his case, it is crouching right next to him.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the first boss, like, throws fucking girders at you.
Yeah, not only is that very visually impressive, I mean, it gives you this real sense of like, holy shit, it's, we're on a building and it's throwing girders at me. But, you know, it's the first boss. It's a good basic pattern for you to, it's a very exciting battle that first time.
Yeah, yeah, no, that, like, they are screen width girders.
Yeah.
He, like, reaches off, because he stands at the edge of the screen, he reaches behind him, whips a girder at you from one of, at one of three heights, so you either have to, like, jump or duck or jump. Mm-hmm. At a different arc, and then he jumps to the other side of the screen and throws more girders at you.
Yeah, yeah, and that's that confidence that I think they exude is that this is a game that knows what it's doing in terms of what it's presenting to you. Like, here's the first boss. It's visually impressive. It's exciting, even if, you know, challenge wise, it's not necessarily that difficult. The first time you play it, you're definitely like, whoa, holy shit!
Yeah,
which is. You know, that's a thing that Nintendo does a lot with the very first boss encounter you have in a lot of their games. Is they're usually pretty easy, but they have to have a wow factor. Mm-hmm. And this game definitely has that. It's a very polished game, even if, you know, story and plot and design wise, it's
pretty similar to some
kitchen sink. But that was Nintendo games of the era. Yeah. So often they were cultural mishmashes of, like, let's take this very clear, you know, sort of Blade Runner inspiration from American cinema and have a bunch of thing, you know, like hopping Chinese vampires, which is
just random stuff. Yeah. And it's great because games don't have that lack of cohesion anymore.
Yeah.
Generally.
Yeah. Just bold, brazen.
So I don't know if this game is available on virtual console. I don't think it is.
Yeah.
It looks like the cartridge will run you about $20.
Okay.
Or obviously, yeah, there's emulators and ROMs.
And I'm assuming it earned its place on the cover of Nintendo Power by virtue of being a Jalico game, which, like, at the time they had a lot of cachet. They were doing really well with Bases Loaded. And they were the kind of a major publisher at the time, and it's too bad that they've, you know, sort of been.
I like how the Nintendo Power cover is like looking through binoculars at,
yes,
like these like alien growth chambers.
Those wildly interpretive Nintendo Power covers.
Yeah, it was. I trying to think what I might have thought this game was at the time. Like, maybe I thought it was had more of a spy-ish slant to it. I don't know, but
I had no idea. I have no memory of the article. You know, I clearly remember that issue, but that was a game that I skimmed over because who the fuck knew?
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, as far as soundtrack goes,
yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't get to playing it on my PSP. I didn't really get to give it a good listen.
No songs like jumped out at me. I'm gonna play something on the outro to the show that you can listen to. But that was
Kurt Gulata's main complaint, is that the soundtrack is largely it's certainly fine but kind of forgettable. There's no real catchy tunes.
I think there were, like, I don't know, like the last level music is kind of okay.
Yeah,
just like some really, really. I think that's the only level the music that particular song appears in, and it's, you know, pretty high intensity. Like, oh shit, this is the last level music.
Okay.
Because you're going into what appears to be the dude's house to kill him.
Okay.
His house, which is full of ninjas and these purple dudes that pounce at you. Purple pouncers.
The next time I play this game, it will be on a larger screen with headphones so that I can really appreciate the audio and sensory experience. I played it on my PSP because at that moment it was the most convenient place to load the ROM. But I really want to experience this game like as it was meant to be on a larger screen, with being able to actually hear and enjoy the music.
Yeah, I got it rocking on a CRT.
Oh, nice. I'm going to have to rock it with a CRT screen filter.
Which a cool thing I realized is that I can control my CRT TV with my smartphone.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Does your phone have an RF sensor?
Yeah, there's like a built-in app. It took me about a minute, and I was able to hook it up as a universal remote to my TV, which is great because I lost the remote.
Oh, that's like, really great.
Yeah, it was stuck on the video settings. And I was like, shit, what am I going to do here?
That's cool.
Yep.
Androids.
So, yeah, if you need a remote, check out your what your phone might have built in. And second, play Vice Project Doom because it's a pretty good NES game.
Mostly check out your phone, though. Like, if you take away one thing from listening to this episode.
No, it should probably be Vice Project Doom. We talked about that for most of the time.
Okay, but don't forget to look on your phone and see if it has an IR sensor built in so that you can use it as a universal remote. Because if you lose your TV remote, what are you going to do?
You need to get to Channel 3. You can turn on your NES and play Vice Project Doom.
Channel 3 or Channel 2, depending on what the Switch is. No, with the NES, it's just a fixed.
It's just 3. Yeah.
Right. Right. So unless you're using AV cables on the Toaster NES, and you can, which you should be doing. Don't use the RF switch. Hook it up to your CRT's.
I got a top loader, so.
You got a top loader. Okay. Well, you're fucked.
No, I'm not. I got a top loader. It's excellent. All right, that's going to do it. Listen to some Vice Project Doom music.
And dig deep into ICOM.
Yeah. Yeah, we might do some digging. We'll see.
Sure. All right.
All right. Catch you guys later.
Take care, everybody. I mean that.